Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas & Go at the Y, and Gas & Go at Mill Bay.
It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station, broadcasting from Signal Hill in beautiful downtown Kodiak, where it is a beautiful day. They are calling for isolated showers after 1 p.m., but partly sunny skies overall, with a high near 43. And we are up to 42 degrees. Scattered showers tonight, mainly between 7 p.m. and 1 a.m. Mostly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 34. South wind to 15 miles per hour, could gust as high as 20. Coming up on the midday news, four more cases of COVID for the Kodiak Island Borough. The House Transportation Committee gets some input about the new governor proposal to allow ATVs on roads. And more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. A Minneapolis jury is hearing personal memories of a young George Floyd as they weigh the evidence against the former police officer charged with killing him last year. George Floyd's brother, Philonis, took the stand today. He recalled hanging out with Floyd when they were kids playing video games.
I finally beat him in a game, and I was just so happy just thinking about that. And he reset the game and would say, "Come on, let's play again."
The prosecution argues Derek Chauvin committed second-degree murder when he kept his knee pressed on Floyd's neck for more than 9 minutes. Floyd was being arrested for allegedly using a fake $20 bill to buy cigarettes. Chauvin maintains he was acting in accordance with his police training. Today, his lawyer was unable to convince Judge Peter Cahill to sequester the jury after more protests erupted overnight following Sunday's fatal police shooting of a 20-year-old black man, also in Minnesota. Dante Wright was shot as he fled from police in his vehicle during a traffic stop in Brooklyn Center, north of Minneapolis. Police Chief Tim Gannon released body camera footage that he says seems to show the officer accidentally fired her gun at Wright.
"As I watched the video and listened to the officer's commands, it is my belief that the officer had the intention to deploy their taser, but instead shot Mr. Wright with a single bullet. This appears to me, from what I viewed and the officer's reaction and distress immediately after, that this was an accidental discharge."
The officer has been placed on administrative leave. Police say they stopped Wright over traffic-related violations when their system flagged an outstanding warrant for his arrest. The White House released its priorities for immigration-related spending today, and it continues the rejection of former President Donald Trump's emphasis on barriers and enforcement. NPR's John Burnett reports that 2022 discretionary spending request has no new money for the border wall.
The document nixes any more funding for border wall construction and cancels unused funds, as Joe Biden promised during his campaign. But it says nothing about the 27 contracts that are currently on hold. Biden suspended them and has not said if they'll go forward. Instead of steel and concrete, the White House is asking for more than $1 billion for border security, but primarily to modernize ports of entry and invest in surveillance technology. The budget would also pump $861 million in aid to El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala to address the root causes of migration that are driving record numbers to the U.S.-Mexico border. Biden has promised to invest $4 billion in the region during his presidency. John Burnett, NPR News.
The Dow's closed down 55 points, ending the day at 33,745. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News es presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
Kodiak Area Emergency Operations Center has reported that Kodiak Island Borough has broken the 1,100 total in COVID-19 cases after reporting four new cases this morning. These cases included one travel-related case, two close contact cases, and one community spread case. This brings the total case count to 1,101 and the active case count to 9. Another hospitalization was also reported today, bringing the total hospitalizations to date for COVID-19 to 45. There is currently one active local hospitalization. Fairbanks mayors are concerned about a Dunleavy administration proposal to allow ATVs, snow machines, and other off-highway vehicles on all state roads with speed limits of 45 miles per hour or less. Some local governments could enact their own restrictions, but others, including the Fairbanks North Star Borough, lack the power to do so. Borough Mayor Bryce Ward told the State House Transportation Committee during a meeting Thursday much of the borough is not suitable for off-highway vehicles to be driven on roads.
Is urbanized and is built up and not considered rural. And so areas of College Road, the University, West Fairbanks, Eastern Western Badger Road and North Pole, and then areas just outside the outskirts of the city all have very much a city feel to them.
Both Ward and City of Fairbanks Mayor Jim Matherly expressed safety concerns about mixing highway vehicles with cars and trucks on roads, mixing off-highway vehicles with cars and trucks on roads. Matherly noted that the city has the authority to ban off-highway vehicles from roads within its borders, but it would create, quote, a wonky situation because the city is surrounded by the borough.
Because we're right smack in the middle of it. It would make enforcement of it impossible, in my opinion.
Both the Fairbanks City Council and the North Star Borough Assembly are considering resolutions opposing the state regulatory proposal. Officials from Palmer and Dillingham also expressed concerns about the proposed change during Thursday's House Transportation Committee meeting, while Ketchikan Gateway Borough Mayor and former state trooper Rodney Dial said opening slower-speed state roads to off-highway vehicles could create new opportunities for tour businesses. The proposal is out for public comment until April 18th. A German scientist has teamed with University of Alaska Fairbanks researchers to develop a way to remotely determine the presence of permafrost in soils. As KUAC's Mary Alt reports, the technique uses color variation in trees and other vegetation.
Scientists can use remote sensing drones and satellite images to determine where there's permafrost on tundra and how deep it is. But it was much harder to monitor permafrost in areas covered by vegetation remotely until researchers discovered this new method. Here's lead author Veronica Derper.
Our approach uses the vegetation to get information off the ground.
In the past, scientists had to shove a steel stick into the earth to measure permafrost thickness beneath vegetation. That method was time and labor intensive. Researchers decided to find an easier way.
We thought, like, okay, let's use this vegetation information that we can see from above with our nice images from the satellites.
Researchers determined which colors of vegetation in satellite images correlated with areas where scientists had found permafrost using manual techniques. Then they tried to use the color in the satellite images to predict where there was permafrost.
And we actually could do it. It was really nice.
The new technique will allow scientists to assess whether there is permafrost beneath large swaths of land quickly in areas covered by vegetation. For KUAC, I'm Mary Auld.
A glacier in Denali National Park is advancing rapidly. According to the National Park Service, the Muldrow Glacier, which originates on Denali's northeast flank, is surging downslope, a cyclical acceleration that last occurred in the 1950s. KUAC's Dan Bros reports.
The 34-mile-long Muldrow Glacier is the largest on the north side of the Alaska Range and visible from a portion of the road into Denali National Park, a view that's changing as the Muldrow surges downslope toward the McKinley River. Denali National Park Science and Resources Team leader Dave Schurekauer recently flew onto the glacier, and he says the surge has churned up its surface.
In particular, the edges of the glacier, the interface between the valley, the bedrock, and then the ice is completely broken up. There's giant chunks of ice thrown off to the side.
Schurekauer says the glacier is moving about 20 meters per day, over 100 times faster than its non-surge speed of 16 centimeters a day, as measured by famed mountaineer Bradford Washburn back in 1976.
He deserves some credit here because he is the only person that measured the rate of movement on the glacier during its quiet phase. And so that reference condition that he captured in 1976 is awesome right now. Like, we have a story to tell about how fast it normally goes and how fast the ice is moving during the surge.
Prior to Washburn's establishment of the West Buttress as the preferred route to climb Denali, the Muldrow was the most popular path for mountaineers and is still attempted by a few every year. But Schurekauer says the surge has made it impassable.
There were a couple of parties that were planning on using the Muldrow as their climbing route in attempting the summit this year, and those folks are being encouraged to change their plan. My hunch is that the historic route on the Muldrow won't be climbable for many years to come now.
The last time the Muldrow Glacier surged was in 1956-57, when it advanced over 4 miles in a few months, leaving behind a now dirt and vegetation-covered area of ice.
And right now, the toe of the glacier is pushing into that old stagnant ice, so it might break that up and be a pretty dramatic change in the scenery.
According to an NPS release, surging glaciers are rare in the world, but Denali's extreme topography makes them more common around the peak. Schurekauer says the Muldrow appears to operate on a roughly 50-year surge cycle, dictated by a few factors.
The geometry of the glacier, the underlying bedrock, and its internal hydrology.
He says the surge is expected to end with a large release of water in June.
Potential for a very intense outburst flood, because there's masses of water trapped under that glacier to lubricate that surface to the extent where it can surge at this rate. And the reason the surge ends is because that trapped water finds a path out.
Schurekauer says the water will flood the McKinley River, but is not expected to impact any populated areas, which are far downstream. He says the Muldrow surge is being closely monitored by scientists and an array of instruments deployed on and along the glacier.
We have a soundscape station out there on the edge, and we have time-lapse cameras, and the whole story is on our brand-new Muldrow Surging Glacier website.
Schurekauer says the Park Service hopes to begin uploading real-time images of the Muldrow Glacier's movement. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Alaska lawmakers are considering legalizing hatcheries to boost wild shellfish stocks like king crab and mussels. It's an idea that's been around since at least the 1990s, and the goal would be to replicate the economic success of Alaska's enhanced salmon fisheries. But as KSTK's Sage Smiley reports, some scientists say they're worried about what hatchery crab and other species could do to natural populations.
Throughout Alaska's waters, shellfish populations have been in decline for decades, decimated by overfishing in the 1980s and by changing ocean environments in the years since. Bristol Bay's world-renowned sockeye salmon fishery was a bright spot in a dismal statewide salmon harvest last year, but its red king crab fishery is in steep decline.
And there's quite a lot of concern that this fishery could close as early as this year.
Ginny Eckert is a professor of fisheries at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. She spoke at a recent legislative hearing earlier this month in favor of a bill that supporters say could help reanimate shellfish populations statewide, including in Bristol Bay. The Dunleavy administration supports this initiative. Sam Raybung, the commercial fisheries director for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, has a background in mariculture. He says allowing hatcheries for crab and other commercially harvested wild species could help state fisheries managers in Alaska.
The only tool the ADF&G has at this time to help those stocks recover is to keep the fisheries closed, which we have done for over 35 years. With the passage of SB 64, there will be another tool to try.
Sponsored by Kodiak Republican Gary Stevens, Senate Bill 64 would specifically allow shellfish hatcheries in the state. Proponents say investors could then grow and release shellfish like clams and crab to boost statewide shellfish populations and harvests.
There's already mariculture in Alaska on state leases. Aquatic farms produce Pacific oysters, blue mussels, and several species of kelp. But Raybung says mariculture hatcheries would be a form of fishery enhancement for species released and caught in the wild.
This entails the restoration, rehabilitation, or enhancement of natural production. And this benefits the common property fisheries, subsistence, personal use, sport, and commercial, rather than private ownership.
Ketchikan Independent Representative Dan Ortez sponsored the House version of the legislation.
I mean, it's all in the name of taking advantage of what has so far been an untapped resource in terms of, you know, the oceans and the shorelines of Southeast Alaska and all of Coast Alaska have always been ripe for this kind of thing.
Ortez says new mariculture development could be a significant economic driver.
The technologies and the recognition that we need to diversify our fisheries industry even more as other fisheries start to maybe encounter problems. I guess there hasn't been the need necessarily up to this point in history. And now that there's the need, we're providing, the pathway for that need.
But there are some who worry about how releasing juvenile shellfish species would affect the larger ecosystem. University of Alaska Fairbanks Fisheries Professor Milo Atkinson wrote a letter warning lawmakers that juvenile crabs aren't like young salmon that mainly return to the same rivers and streams each year. Crab go wherever.
The big problem with the crab hatcheries that makes them a lot more risky is that they are not going to segregate from the wild stocks. They're not going to congregate in a spot where you can harvest them without also harvesting the wild-born animals, and they're not going to be reproductively isolated from the wild crabs as well. Basically, you're going to have a mixture of wild and hatchery-born crabs.
Atkinson told KSTK in an interview that he knows mariculture has the potential to benefit fishing communities, but he wants to make sure the state doesn't harm its marine resources.
Based on the evidence and the research we have right now, in my opinion, it's much too risky to proceed with a crab hatchery program. But, further research could possibly change my mind.
Fish and Game's Sam Raybung says even if the bill becomes law, don't expect a gold rush-type stampede for shellfish hatchery permits. He says his agency would be deliberate and conservative with an emphasis on natural productivity.
Alaska already has the most stringent aquaculture guidance in the world and is held up as the example of how to do it right in a manner that minimizes negative effects on natural production and maintains the sustainability of natural production and the fisheries and people who depend on that. And that will not change.
The legislation would also allow the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute to throw its weight behind hatchery-raised shellfish products. And it would allow Alaska's nonprofit salmon hatcheries to get into the mariculture business. Both versions of the bill are still being heard and debated by legislative committees. A date on a floor vote hasn't been set. In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
Meow. Cats in Radioland awake. Yawn, stretch, and listen to me. The KMXT Pet Owner Pledge Challenge is on. No, don't go back to sleep. This is serious. It's the dogs. Those slobbering, fawning relics of a bygone age think they can get more of their owners to pledge support to Public Radio KMXT than you felines. Don't let those floppy-eared fur factories win. Go to the door right now and ask to be let out. But refuse to go out until they pledge their support to KMXT. Good. Now scratch your owner unexpectedly when they're only trying to pet you. Good. Now mysteriously bite your owner's hand. Good, good. Now crisscross in front of your owner while they try to walk. Crisscross until they pledge. Crisscross, yes. Those dogs don't stand a chance. Remind your owner to visit the website at kmxt.org and click on the blue button. Or they can call 907-486-3181. That's right, crisscross, crisscross. Meow. We cannot fail.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch, connecting businesses with a blue pipeline. More after this.
Have fish in the freezer? Have it on the table in minutes with Azmi's new Cook It Frozen and hundreds of other recipes at wildalaskaseafood.com.
A new Blue Pipeline Venture Studio will connect marine business entrepreneurs with the technology, contacts, and finances they need to grow. The goal is to deliver jobs, investment, and opportunities across Alaska.
The state's ocean economy really just includes anything that takes place on the water, most prominently the seafood industry. It also includes marine recreation, maritime research, transportation.
Garrett Everidge, previously a well-known fisheries economist with the former McDowell Group, is the new research director for the Venture Studio.
There is significant opportunity to grow the Alaskan ocean economy. That growth might come from refinement of existing industries, getting more value out of sand, for example, or support for new industries, growing seaweed, just to generally be prepared for those opportunities that aren't even on the radar.
The nonprofit studio is an arm of an ocean cluster started in 2017 by the Bering Sea Fishermen's Association. Everidge says many people have great business ideas, but they don't know where to start. The studio will serve as a matchmaker to connect them with capital and expertise.
And then also really just try to identify the roadblocks of why has this specific industry not grown? What are some of the constraints? And really just try to kind of put together some market research.
Ocean clusters led by Iceland are operating around the world. Everidge said his team will focus for most of this year in developing a robust venture studio and being a resource for Alaskans with a proactive vision.
What can we do now to position us for success, right? Like, we have a lot of challenges and opportunities that we know are headed our way. Like, climate change is a great one, ocean acidification. What's our plan for those? That's another element. What does this all look like in 30 years?
Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 12th day of April, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 7:07, won't set again until 9:16 p.m., giving us 14 hours and 10 minutes of glorious daylight. That is a gain of 4 minutes and 56 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 9, set in 1985, and our record high was 55, set in 1948, currently 42 degrees under very pleasant conditions here in Kodiak. Not much in the way of a breeze. They are saying we might look for isolated showers after 1 today. Partly sunny skies, though, otherwise, with a high near 43 and south winds to 10 miles per hour. For tomorrow, a slight chance of rain and snow before 10 a.m., then rain showers, high near 40. Southeast wind tomorrow, about 10 miles per hour. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up here on the east side at 3:21 p.m. That will be a 7.7-foot tide. Our next low tide will be at 9:08 p.m. of 0.8 feet. And our high tide for the middle of the night here on the east side will be at 3:18 a.m. and be 8.8 feet. And our low tide for tomorrow morning here on the east side will be at 9:39 a.m. and be minus 0.5 feet. Over on the west side, these are Yannick Pass tides. You have a high tide coming up at 3:47 p.m. That will be a 14.8-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 9:48 p.m. of 0.3 feet. Your next high tide will be at 3:48 a.m. of 15.6 feet, followed by a low tide tomorrow morning on the west side at 10:11 a.m. of minus 1.4 feet. Mariners, here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A front will remain over the central Gulf before entering the eastern Gulf Monday night. A 996 millibar low 280 nautical miles southeast of Kodiak Island will move Tuesday afternoon to 100 nautical miles southwest of Middleton Island and go to 992 millibars on Wednesday morning. Your resulting weather, Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore, small craft advisory through tonight. We have southwest winds at 20 knots right now and seas to 10 feet. For tomorrow, southwest 15, shifting to the northeast late, seas to 7 feet. Over in the Shelikof, southwest 20 right now and seas to 5 feet. For tomorrow, south winds to 15 knots, should shift to the northeast late, seas to 4 feet tomorrow late in the Shelikof. Inside waters, Chiniac and Marmot Bays. Chiniac Bay, southwest 15 right now and seas to 2 feet. For tomorrow, south 15 becoming east 10 tomorrow afternoon, seas to 2 feet. Up in Marmot Bay, south 10 increasing to 15 this afternoon, seas to 3 feet. For tomorrow, southeast 15 diminishing 10 knots tomorrow afternoon, seas to 3 feet. The Kodiak City Council will be holding a budget work session this coming Saturday. It's happening at 9:30 a.m. It's going to be held in the Kodiak Public Library's multipurpose room. The meeting is open to the public, web-streamed on the city website, and, of course, it's very interesting. The web-streaming link, agendas, and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. To request paper copies of the packet or for more information, call the city clerk at 486-8636. Meetings coming up in the Kodiak Island Borough. Tonight we have a Consolidation Committee meeting happening at 6 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. For Wednesday, we have a Planning and Zoning Work Session. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. On Thursday, we have a Borough Assembly Regular Meeting. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Bayside Fire Hall. And on Wednesday, April 21st, we have a Planning and Zoning Regular Meeting. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. The Kodiak Arts Council is having their Arts and Adventure Auction. So if you're clicking away out there in Cyberland, go to the Kodiak Arts Council site and you can join them online. It's the 33rd annual Arts and Adventure Auction. It's online this time. You can browse and bid on dozens of collectibles and must-haves, including art pieces for every budget, travel adventures, jewelry, health and beauty packages, just a fun place to look around. Again, that's the Kodiak Arts Council website. Powerful public speaking workshops are happening with new dates starting April 14th. So that's just this next Wednesday, 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m., and going for two more Wednesdays after that. They're happening online via Zoom or Kodiak College Campus Center Room 127. Whatever your bully pulpit or soapbox may be, this dynamic workshop helps you find and hone your voice to maximum effectiveness. Using time-proven strategies, you will be able to deliver powerful and persuasive messages to a variety of audiences. The course is appropriate for students 18 and up, and the class will be conducted either in person or on Zoom. You can choose the best option when you register. There is a fee for these classes. For more information, contact Heather at 486-1212. That's 486-1212. Fresh off the presses from the Kodiak Public Library, April is Poetry Month, and the Public Library is celebrating. Stop in and add a poem to the poet tree and read the poem of the day, pick a book of poems, or sign up to read a poem at our next poetry reading. Contact Ms. Ani at 486-8686 to be involved. The library is open from 10 a.m. to 6:30 Monday through Thursday, and from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Friday and Saturday, with 30-minute cleaning closures between. That's 2:30 to 3 p.m. Patrons are welcome for a two-hour visit once per day. Appointments are not necessary. Masks are required. The library also offers home delivery for those unable to get out of the house and curbside pickup at the side door. Call the library for this service, available Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And again, that number to call for the Kodiak Public Library, 486-8686.
Attention all dogs! Attention all dogs! A gauntlet has been thrown down by the cats. No, don't chase it. This isn't Fetch. Good dog. Good dog. No, it's the Pet Owner Challenge at Public Radio KMXT. The cats disdainfully have challenged you to a duel. Whoever gets more owners to pledge to KMXT wins. So bark. It's your only power. Whenever your owners tune in to public radio, bark incessantly until they make their pledge of support. Bark, I say. It's your only chance. Right now, sly cats are crawling onto keyboards and pledging on behalf of their owners. So bark. Bark until your owners go to KMXT.org and click on the blue button. Or they could call 907-486-3181.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181. Fax us at 486-2733 or email psa@kmxt.org.